You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, final hour of the week on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. It's been a good week. Sabres development camp on the heels of last week. It was a week ago today when the NHL draft started. We thought maybe there would be a trade made with the Sabres. Didn't happen. Throughout the weekend, that didn't happen. We learned that Kevin Adams was trying. Then he had free agency. Kind of a thud as far as, you know, nothing at the top end, but certainly a few guys signed to help out the bottom six, and then Sabres development camp. And now we're transitioning back into football as we roll into July, and the Bills will open training camp July 24th at St. John Fisher University in Rochester. Joining me on the WestHer hotline right now is Doug Farrar, longtime NFL writer. Doug's at a lot of places. You can find him USA Today. SB Nation is where he wrote his article that I wanted to touch on here, which is about teams needing or not needing a number one wide receiver. Now, Doug, the Bills are kind of in this position, so I wanted to reach out to you about this. First of all, thanks for joining me here. Hope you had a great 4th of July. And Josh, if you could pull Doug up. I don't have access to my screen here. So there you go. Happy 4th of July to you. Thanks for doing this morning and joining me.
Thank you, Sal. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm sitting on a deck in Whidbey Island, Washington, and let's just say we blew up a lot of stuff last night. I don't want to get into details.
I love it.
Ordinances are around here, but we blew up a lot of stuff last night. It was a very successful 4th.
I felt a little weird coming on this morning and saying how I live in the city of Buffalo, and like the end of my street, there was a great fireworks display, and it was like a block party where they just shut down the street and everybody brought out their lawn chairs, and I'm like, I don't even know if I should be talking about this on the air, to be quite honest, but it was super cool.
I can neither confirm nor deny that those things are fabulous.
No doubt about it. Doug, thanks for joining me, and especially you know, on this holiday. But I thought it was really important to kind of get a perspective of someone who's seeing it from a league-wide, you know, perspective like you did, and you wrote about it, which is pivoting away from a true number one wide receiver. The Bills have done that with no longer having Stephon Diggs. Of course, they also are without Gabriel Davis. They did replace those guys with Curtis Samuel, and a few other guys are taking some flyers on, guys who are returning. But what did you find when you dove into how teams are treating the wide receiver position and specifically the number one wide receiver?
Sure. And I've been, you know, you talk to coaches when you do this for a living, and remember Mike Smith, who used to be the Falcons head coach at a combine about 12 years ago. He's such a nice guy. And I kind of ear holed him out in a hallway outside the media room. We got to talking for about 15 minutes. And he said, you know, Doug, the league is going away from, you know, specific, we're going to do this three wide against this cover three or whatever. It's not going to be so much about scheme versus scheme. It's going to be about spacing and matchups. And boy, did Mike Smith see the future, because when you watch the NFL today, it is really so much more about getting open against this defense, or, you know, a defense shifting their safeties. And the Bills do this a lot, as you know, against this kind of, you know, receiver deployment. It is so much more, it's almost become basketballish. You know, the 7-on-7 aspect of football that comes down from high school and up through college and into the pros, it really is more about that. And I found it, I've been doing research on this for a while, and then I saw some Jordan Love quotes, the Packers quarterback, saying, you know what, we don't have a number one receiver, and that's actually to our advantage, because what we can do is put every guy anywhere in the formation. We're using a lot of motion. We're using a lot of shifts. It doesn't become burdensome upon me to get to this one guy. And then Tom Brady was on Colin Cowherd's show about 3 weeks ago, and he was talking about how you need to set things up for your alpha receiver, your Randy Moss or your Rob Gronkowski. You need to make sure he gets the ball so he's not just running routes all the time. And I thought to myself, well, A, Brady won most of his Super Bowls without a true alpha dog. I mean, he had Moss, he had Gronk, but those first three, you better get a number two receiver. It was a bunch of threes. So I think, and at any given point in the NFL, you know, Sal, there are maybe 10 to 12 true number one guys, the guys who can beat press, the guys who can beat brackets, the guys who, no matter what you do, you don't really have an answer. You have to align at least your best corner and probably your best safety to him. But it's great if you got him, if you've got a Jefferson or a Jamar Chase or, you know, Diggs a couple of years ago. But I think we saw when Diggs you know, he was that sort of Devontae Adams type of receiver who could just beat everything. And then it kind of turned into maybe not so much, and he became more of a possession guy. And I think it really affected their offense, at, you know, in the Dorsey to in the OC switch last year. Because if you don't have that number one guy, but you're still thinking as an organization that you need him, you've got a problem. So when I looked at the Packers, the 49ers, the Lions, the Chiefs, I mean, the Chiefs and 49ers, I love Brandon Ayuk, but I think he's like a 1A. The two teams mm-hmm. who played in the Super Bowl last year, neither one of them had a number one receiver. And in the Chiefs' case, outside of Kelce, I mean, good Lord, who did they have? And MVS is up right here. He's a pretty, you know, up with you guys, he's a pretty good vertical guy. But under no circumstances would you say that Marquez Valdes-Scantling is a number one guy who can just take the top off of coverage over and over and over. So it does pertain to the Bills. And I got to interview Josh Allen about a month ago, and we talked about how different that room is and how Josh is learning to connect with those receivers. But it also, you know, with a new OC coming in and you know, he's got that whole off season, because I don't think you can tell much when you switch coordinators, you know, mid season, you know, what Joe Brady does now this year. And Josh told me, you know, we're doing all these different things and it makes me want to work on my eye discipline and, you know, my mechanics and all that. But he also knows, and we discussed it, that because that receiver room is so different, and it's going to be more about being a point guard, distributing the ball to your guys, because you don't have a 7'2" dude who's just going to dunk all the time. It becomes more of a different philosophy. And I think teams more and more are saying, you know what, if we don't have a number one receiver, that's okay. You know, mm-hmm. what did the Chiefs do last year? They led the league in 13th personnel, three tight ends. One of their primary constructs was to put all three of their tight ends in either a trips or a bunch formation to one side. And then the other tight ends would sort of scheme Kelce open. They would open things up for Kelce, because Kelce, still a great player, not quite what he was a couple of years ago. So I think, you know, it's a long-winded way of saying that I think teams are starting to be really smart about the fact that, okay, we don't have this number one guy, and it's okay. And actually, and Matt LaFleur of the Packers, in conjunction with Jordan Love, also said this, you know, it really can be an advantage, because you can't get a beat on us. There isn't a number one guy. There isn't anyone in particular for you to focus on. If you're scheming that up the right way, it becomes incredibly difficult to defend.
Here's your conversation, a bit of it, with Josh Allen and working with Keon Coleman specifically as he gets inserted into the wide receiver room as the Bills' first pick of this year's draft, of course, the first pick of the second round.
That's the number one thing. You know, guys that love football and do things the right way typically play a long time in this league. So he's definitely got the makeup and the mindset, learning the playbook at an accelerated rate. We're kind of throwing him into the fire right now in OTAs and kind of forcing his hand there, which is good to see, but he's handling it in stride. Physically, he's a big guy that can move and drop his hips, and he can turn and catch a back shoulder ball. So the physical attributes are there. They're fun to be playing with that.
That is Josh Allen with in your conversation, Doug, with him. What's interesting here in Buffalo is there's still going to be a debate. There has been a debate. We went through a lot. You've read it, and you've seen it, and you've heard it. But here in Buffalo, it was a lot of nonstop talk on this program and others about the trade with the Chiefs and the trade that they acquire Xavier Worthy. The Chiefs, maybe, are they looking to fill that void they didn't have? And the Bills are saying, and Bills fans saying, how could you trade with the Chiefs and give them that guy? I mean, it just feels like this is a really interesting dynamic that you traded with that team. They get Worthy. The Bills get Keon Coleman, and they're going to fit him in here. And he's not going to be necessarily the true number one wide receiver, of course, right away.
And they're such different receivers, right? I mean, Worthy is more,
right.
He's more that Devontae Smith kind of guy. You know, he's
that's right.
A little kind of water bug. And Coleman, when I watched his, I loved his tape. Reminded me of DK Metcalf coming out of college. Just a big, fast ball winner who can, you know, get up and just Godzilla a cornerback at any time. And it took Metcalf a couple years to get to that position where he was a legit number one. Or he could, excuse me, I'm so sorry. He could provide answers to most anything a defense threw at him. But if you look right at the Bills situation, I mean, would they have been better off with Worthy or Coleman? I think in their case, they're telling you with the acquisition of Coleman, because the Chiefs want someone who can take the top off the defense. They're making that clear, not only with Worthy, but with Hollywood Brown. I think what the Bills want, what Brady wants, and what Josh Allen will respond well to is that bigger guy who can just, even if he can't get open, he can create openings with his pure physical alpha traits. So, and there are all kinds of different ways to get to become a number one receiver. And I think Worthy and Coleman have the potential to do that. But it may take them each a couple years to get the refining points and the nuances of their positions. And you could argue that they're playing two entirely different positions because they're just such different guys. But in that element where, okay, you're bringing in a lot of guys who, you know, you haven't worked with them before. So everyone has to be on the same page. You have Keon Coleman, who's coming in from Florida State. He's a rookie. You're going to have to simplify things a little bit just to make sure that everyone knows which route they're running. So in that case, it behooves Josh to, again, become that point guard, which they've experimented with in the past. I think what they're telling you with their personnel this year is this is the year that the defining part of their offense.
Doug, how much do you think or know does the financial aspect play into this? Because let's be honest, wide receiver salaries are going through the roof. And if you want a number one wide receiver, I mean, I'm looking right now, according to the website Over the Cap, $25 million a year. Eight guys are making at least that, and four guys are making $30 million a year. I mean, these prices for a number one wide receiver are getting outrageous, and teams might be saying, I don't want to do that. I'd rather have two or three guys that I can pay that amount to.
I think so. And teams see it differently. I mean, Nico Collins of the Texans just got a big deal. Amon-Ra St. Brown got his deal, and I love watching Amon-Ra St. Brown. But would you call him a true, like, offense-defining number one guy? I wouldn't. That's not to denigrate Amon-Ra St. Brown. So, you know, Jalen Waddle. Tyreek Hill already got his deal. Now the Dolphins are going all in with the force multiplier speed. You're paying Hill and Waddle that much money. Well, that tells you how the Dolphins want to build their, you know, they got Raheem Mostert, who scored like 18 touchdowns last year on a prove it deal. But the Dolphins also knew they didn't always have the yak they wanted. So they get Malik Washington, who had more yards after contact than any receiver in the NCAA last year. So yeah, I think for some teams, salary is a part of it. You look at the Chiefs, when they traded Tyreek Hill to the Dolphins, they used that to build a defense, and without that defense, I don't think the Chiefs would have even made the playoffs last year, much less win the Super Bowl. So it is to a point, and this is obviously going to differ for every team, you know, getting back to the Bills, they're in a case where, hey, a lot of rebuilding going on, especially on defense. That safety group is going to be different. Cornerback's going to be different. How are we going to best allot our resources without trying to go out and get that one guy at $30 million a year? Now, if you're the Dolphins and you want to go whole hog on that, hey, fine. Maybe that's what you should do. Maybe they should have trusted Mike McDaniel, who's one of the best offensive, you know, passing game schemers. And you know, I'm not arguing that either point is more valid, but I do think that becomes, especially as the cap keeps going up and the bar keeps getting set higher at every position, teams are looking like, okay, we want to really invest in our defense, or we want to make sure we have the best offensive line in the NFL. We can't necessarily go out and get one of those $30 million a year guys. And the thing is, if you get one and he doesn't really pay, if he's not a Justin Jefferson, if he's not a Jamar Chase, if he's not that good, and you pay him that much money, you are hosed. From a personnel, just a personnel sense, and what you can do to improve your team. Now you've got this, you know, albatross around your neck, and it just becomes hard. So yeah, I think, and again, it's dependent on team to team, but I think a lot of teams are looking at that. Hey, let's really lean on our quarterback. Let's lean on our offensive coordinators, and let's find different ways in this current NFL, which is so much more about spacing and matchups and getting the guy open no matter who he is. And then I hear Jordan Love say, this is actually an advantage because you can't key on one guy. And I hear Tom Brady say, well, we have to key on one guy if we have a Randy Moss or a Rob Gronkowski. We have to build our whole offense around him and make sure that he's happy and satisfied and all that. And I think to myself, well, if I were running a team, I might find the lack of a number one receiver, and I have a bunch of, you know, 1As or 2Bs. I might find that more interesting. I might think to myself in a money ball way, hey, what can I do with this that other teams aren't doing?
Yeah, one more on the Bills. I want to ask you a little bit on a couple teams in the AFC East. You just brought up like how the Chiefs transitioned, but they had Kelce. I feel like, and I'm not putting Dalton Kincaid in Travis Kelce's category right now, but I feel like the Bills feel that's where they want to go. They have two pass-catching tight ends, especially Dalton Kincaid, in the rookie season he had last year, which is what you're saying how the Chiefs kind of operated. If you don't have to have that number one. And if you have a tight end who can be your number one, hey, you can flow everything through there. But you look at what the Bills have. They have Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox. They also have James Cook out of the backfield who can be a really good receiver. And heck, Curtis Samuel is a former running back. He can do a lot of different things.
He's kind of that Debo light in usage. Yeah. Yeah, a few things about that. Kincaid was my TE1 coming out of that draft, and my comp for him was Kelce. When you compare draft prospects to future Hall of Famers, people kind of lose their minds, but right. The attributes are very similar. And it was funny, I mean, you know this, before, you know, they gave Knox that huge deal, and then they drafted Kincaid. The season before that, the Bills had not only the fewest plays of 12 personnel, but like 200 fewer plays than any other team, like 40 yeah. plays with two tight ends on the field. And Brandon Bean talked about it after they drafted Kincaid. Like, we see, especially against nickel defenses, which is the new base defense in the NFL, there are ways to get your if you have those multiple tight ends, you can array them against those base nickel defenses and do some really interesting things. So I think you're going to see that come to fruition. That was a really interesting sort of literal sea change. Like, they never ran with two tight ends, and now, okay, we've got the veteran that we've paid and the rookie who comes in and does have that Travis Kelce skill set. So yeah, I think that's, you know, ideally is going to be, you know, everyone stays healthy and develops, that's going to be a huge part of their passing game.
If I can ask you a little bit about the AFC East, Miami and the Jets, I'm not going to include New England here. They're in a rebuild mode, but which team do you think is further along and is either of them primed to pass the Bills and finally win the AFC East? The Bills have won four in a row here. Which team do you like better here and why? Miami and the Jets.
Miami had some losses on defense. Their offensive line worries me the obvious question with the Jets is, is Aaron Rodgers healthy, and does he not, you know, run for vice president?
That's right.
Can he keep the TMZ elements of his personality off the field? Which, you know, to be fair, he always has. Probably the best pure football thrower of the football I've ever seen. And the Jets' defense, this was ignored because of all the drama. The Jets have a top three defense in the NFL, Sal. Like, you know this. Yeah. You've seen it.
They're really good.
Best corner in the NFL in Sauce Gardner. Some really underrated guys. Quinnen and Quincy Williams together, the brothers, are fabulous. I think if Aaron Rodgers plays, and Aaron Rodgers, and I wrote a tape piece about this right around the time the deal happened. His last year in Green Bay was not good. He was not what he was. So now he's coming off the surgery. He's 40. Outside of Tom Brady, not a lot of quarterbacks have done much in their 40s. Maybe he transcends that. If the Jets have the Aaron Rodgers, I think they're not only in position to contend for the AFC East, but for a Super Bowl. Because at that point, they've pretty much got everything. And that's, you know, that's when they become dangerous. Anything else, you're looking at, you know, another mid-weird season.
And the Patriots, by the way, you agree, right? Rebuilding here. I mean, maybe they hit on Drake May. We're not going to know, though. Their roster is just void of talent.
On offense, yes. On defense,
yes.
They've got some guys. Mm-hmm. They've got some guys that nobody talks about because the Patriots are all of a sudden not interesting. But, you know, Barmore, their safeties. You know, Belichick went out, to buy the guy that just got a new contract. Did nothing with the Lions. You know, Belichick was always that guy who could bring you in from another team and he could, like, see inside you in this rare way. Oh, this is what – okay, we'll do this with you. And you'll be great. So, I like Drake May. I think he's got some stuff to work on. He's not an immediate plus starter. But, they're a really interesting team on defense. I think Mayo is a good transition because he understands enough about what has been, you know, as a player and a coach, that he can kind of forward things his own way. But, you know, people find the Patriots boring. I say, watch their defense, because that's not boring at all. That's really fun.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't let you ask you a question about Seattle, the Seahawks. You're out there. You're close to that team. And what are the expectations for the Seahawks? By the way, the Bills will be out there this year playing a game in November. Always look forward to that trip. But what are the expectations for the Seahawks this year?
Yeah, it's a fun place to see a game. Well, yep. They've got a new head coach, obviously, Mike McDonald, who got career – Ravens D.C., he got career years out of like eight guys. I mean, that Ravens – you know, the two most fun defenses in the NFL for me to watch last year were the Bills or the Chiefs and the Ravens, because that defense, it's and other you know, opponents would say this, it's pressure from everywhere and nowhere and coverage from everywhere and nowhere. You don't really have a bead on what they're doing. I think Seattle has the talent on defense to maximize that. On offense, they have Ryan Grubb, the former OC of the Washington Huskies. Geno Smith is one of, in my opinion, one of the five best deep ball throwers in the NFL. Well, last season for the Huskies under Ryan Grubb, Michael Penix Jr., per Pro Football Focus, attempted 117 passes of 20 or more air yards last season. That was 30 more than any other quarterback in the NCAA. So I think the passing game will be more explosive. I think the run game will be more multiple. The defense will be fascinating. It's a very, very different philosophies on both sides of the ball. The defensive players have said, we've never played a defense like this before. So I think early on, and maybe the Bills will catch some fire off of this, there are going to be some, hey, you were supposed to be over here, and why were you over there? But I think once it hits, you know, maybe late this season into next season, I think Seattle could be dangerous again. You know, it's kind of like the early Legion of Boom years, 2010, 2011, you could start to see it coming together. Like one week, Richard Sherman got just based by Julio Jones, and the next week he's like Darrell Revis all of a sudden. How did this happen? You can see a lot of that there. It's a lot of good young talent. I think the coaching is – I think it's time to move on. All the respect and rule for Pete Carroll, but I think they got the best guy. And I think, you know, they've got kind of an aligned vision, which, again, growing pains this year, but it'll be fun to watch.
Doug, thank you for this. I really appreciate it, especially on a holiday weekend. Enjoy chilling out on the patio and whatever comes around the rest of this 4th of July holiday weekend, my man.
Well, it's a golf day, so I'm excited about that.
Love it.
Always great to talk ball.
It's Savannah Bananas Day here for us, taking the kid and the baseball team to see the Savannah Bananas tonight. You know about them, right? You all into them or no?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Savannah Bananas. Didn't they have the baby race?
Ooh, I don't know. No, I don't know about the baby race. Do they do something like that? They might do that here tonight. I don't know.
Because they do all kinds, you know this. They do all kinds of weird. I think they had a crawling baby race from like the first baseline to the third baseline.
I love it.
We're gonna see with them, so enjoy that.
Yeah, for sure. Doug, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day. Let's catch up soon. Let's do it again sometime during training camp.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks.
All right, you got it. Doug Farrar right there. Really good stuff. He wrote that article on the teams pivoting from maybe not having a true number one wide receiver and saying, hey, maybe that even is better for us. That's kind of what the Bills have done here. There's certainly a financial aspect to it. You don't have a Justin Jefferson or a Tyreek Hill. You're not going to pay for guys like that, a Devontae Adams. The Bills did have Stephon Diggs, of course. He was still making a big number. They wind up trading him to the Houston Texans. The Bills are going more with a kind of, you know, quantity type of situation and putting people in different positions and saying, just defend us all over the field, not just this one guy. Thanks a lot to Doug. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, going to play you Dennis Gilbert from yesterday. Dennis Gilbert, Western New York native, who was drafted by the Chicago Blackhawks, went on to play with the Colorado Avalanche and the Calgary Flames, has now signed with his hometown team, the Buffalo Sabres. Dennis Gilbert spoke with the media. We'll bring you that after this timeout on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.